close actually to there, the Sky. I've only been on there, the Sky, about three times. But I used to be more. And this is one I wrote just after the last time that I was here at Poetry Night. And I woke up the next day and wrote this. The willows and the daisies had brought the case to court. The accused, a dandelion, stood shaking with fear. Two overpaid, overfed poppy heads presented the case for prosecution and defense. We wondered which was which. The judge, a withered old docking without the sense God gave a buttercup, stared vacantly towards the dock. The nettles from their position of fertile privilege bowed their heads reverently in the breeze. Embraced their children whom everyone knew. In time, we developed that abrasive, conservative, nettle view. Being the biggest case anyone could remember, the media were here in their clothes and runners. A beautiful orchid who tried to turn their attention, lost her temper with a bee who was doing her head in, showed her true colours before being overlooked, ignored. Outside, the ryegrass grew restless. The news passed on the wind even before the runners had left court. The jury, hand-picked daisies, produced a guilty verdict. Before the Dawkins' withered hand reached for the gavel, the death sentence was carried out by the thorny arm of the bramble. But at the last minute, the dandelion, born in the image of the sun, was transformed and lifted high above the courtroom. Now religion began. A tiny genetically modified sunflower somewhere nearby, standing on the dome and with work on the side, picked up his violin and smiled.
There's a lot of nature tonight. I mean, we've nettles and cabbage and all kinds of things in this poetry whatsoever. But things we're talking about nature, John Bracken.
Thank you, Alan. These are a few verses that I wrote that I entitled Cox Bridges or the Lee. Of the bridges in Cox City, which spans the River Lee, there are a total of 22. Let's take a look and see. With 10 on the North Channel and 12 spanning the South, they keep a watchful eye on the river as the tide goes in and out. The South Channel begins with the Eamon de Valera, just below the Clarion Hotel. And right beside the City Hall are the Clontarf and Parnell. By the College of Commerce sits Trinity Bridge, honouring nearby Holy Trinity Church, above which is Parliament Bridge, built of stone, so you won't be left in the lurch. Linking Sullivan Quay to the Grand Parade is the footbridge named Nanonadel, commemorating that great founder of the Presentation Sisters, who did so much for education. Then just before we reach French's Quay is one of our oldest bridges, the Southgate, which through the South and North Main Streets is connected to its cousin, the Northgate. By the Labour Exchange is Clark's Bridge, and by Jury's Hotel is St. Finbar's. Next, at UCC, there is Donovan's Bridge, and there are students, the dean, and professors. Off the Western Road is Jay Bridge, as we travel towards the west. And the last one is the only Crowley, near Victoria Cross, where we stop and take a rest. Starting up the North Channel likewise, there are preachers old and new. The first we meet is the Michael Collins, and near the bus station, the Brian Boone. St. Patrick's Bridge is wide, we regard it with pride, and by the Opera House, is the Christie Ring, named after our great hurler, of whose praises all Cork speak. Shandon Footbridge, opposite the Bridewell, is an unique to Pope's Quay. Then the Northgate, rebuilt as Griffith Bridge, goes far back in Cork's history. Next is St. Vincent's Footbridge by the Mersey, and the Newmar Dyke pedestrian near a ridge. Near Fitzgerald Park is Davies, popularly known as the Shaky Bridge. And finally, the Thomas Davis, previously called the Wellington, is at the end of Sunday's Well. That ends my account of the bridges. Thanks for listening by the Ice Chair.
Thanks very much, John, for that. You mentioned the Christie Ring Bridge, but of course there's also the Ring Road, which is named after Christie Ring as well, isn't it? Not sure. Along the way, and there was a bridge when I was growing up, which is now kind of a series of roundabouts, known as the Snotty Bridge, but I think that's knocked down a long time ago because of the stalactites that were hanging up. You remember that? However, next up, Nilor.
The Bedroom Cove, the bedroom, the flowers, dropping away, slowly. Is a lorry still waiting on your farewell kiss on my lips? Corsage waits. I shan't keep them for long. Good night, I suppose. No, good morning, even. The birds have already flying over the rooftop. Good morning. It is the time to go.
From kind of the area around New York City, and I was back there last month, and this is, could be seen as just kind of like a report from the very humble place that it is now. It seems to me that New York is paying for its sins. Its cultural power is waning. It still looks like New York and acts like New York, but as I look down from my 12th floor window at the roofs of yellow cabs, populating like bacteria or erythrocytes in the avenue below, I wonder whether the wind has been knocked out of it. Can you honestly say that the yeah, yeah, yeahs or Regina Spektor commands metaphysical respect in any degree similar to Bob Dylan or the Velvet Underground? And yet this is what we are being asked to consider. The very grit of the city is no longer the emblem of modernity that it once was. The one thing that remains true of New York is that countless tens of thousands of office workers are dying a little each day under the glare of fluorescent lights and taking trains back home at night worn with a kind of strain that no other city can produce except possibly Chicago. The texture of tar and steel girders and the massive heating and ventilation systems of skyscrapers imprint themselves upon the flesh of their faces. The orbicularis orbis and the buccinator and the depressor labii inferioris. But the soul of it is gone, the transcendental purpose of it, all that is left is a machine on autopilot, and 100 women in leotards running on little conveyor belts, crowded into a tiny room like a subway station, where they pack in after work to burn off some calories. They suck down pizzas and sodas and then they sweat it off inside a little grimy purgatory. But I must say, the city does still have a certain grandeur, like the grace of a middle-aged woman who still aspires to seduce, and the vestiges of her newness still conjure a kind of mystery. The mystery of free enterprise and pragmatic individualism before those concepts lost their meaning under the crush of new events.
Thank you very much, Wes. When Wes started off saying New York was going to take for its sins, I was afraid this point was going to go on forever, you know? Well, sorry, I think it'll dig this in one way or the other. Penny Doyle next, please.
All right. The sun shining through dewdrops at dawn, bridges blessing, and a promise of peace to the tides turning. Sea wracks scattered along the way of wrecked sanding, and all that longing, and all that leaving, and the waves rising, and the tide coming in, and all that dying, and all that grieving, and still we sing.
I thought it was a totally unrealistic point, though. You start off Ireland, the sun shining. Where did you get this idea from? I know. Mary, Mary Connolly. Thank you.
This is called Country Christmas 1920. The days before Christmas glowed through the gloaming, like the gels from the dresser, the logs in the grate. Ice around the pump caught the fire of the stars. Shocked hands felt the burning of frost on the gate. On Christmas Eve morning, the house stirred to life. Teresa chopped suet while Nan washed the plates. The goose was brought down from a hook in the rafters. The bills had been paid with a check from the state. At one they sat down to salt fish and white sauce, with big floury spots that came out piping hot. They scrubbed down the deal and stacked some fresh turf. The pillow-slipped pudding grew plump in the pot. The kitchen was scented with spices and ham. Pots hissed on the hob as Nell threaded some leaves of red-berried holly and fashioned a bough to hang in the window just under the eaves. 6 half-pound candles, a gift from the grocer, each wedged in a mangle, were lit after tea. Since Nan was the youngest, she said the Hail Marys. They knelt in the shadow, not needing a tree. Down in the valley, like jewels in the darkness, in windows were seen tiny pinpricks of light to welcome the traveler, the poor, and the lonely, and blaze out the gladness of this special night.
I lost my sister as well within the year, so I just made out this verse for her first anniversary memorial verse, the face went straight from the heart. A young mother of 4 young children. Midnight stars are shining on a grave so close to home. It's there I go for comfort to talk with you alone. I'll never forget the moment we parted. We chatted and said our final goodbye. I held your hand in mine, kept back the tears and a silent cry. Unanswered questions asked of why. So many hopes and dreams denied the day my sister Edna died. Sent it from heaven is all I have. to mark your presence, I'm so glad. My life has changed forever, Esma. That's all down to you. So thanks for looking out for me and everything I do. Lots of things have happened since you're gone, but I have to fight the blow and just try to carry on.
It's very difficult to say anything but that because it's a tension for it. Stephen, but not Stephen O'Beara. The other Stephen.
Is there another Stephen O'Beara?
No, well, it's Stephen with a broom. That's Stephen, yeah, sorry, I couldn't read it. It was a Stephen, not Stephen O'Beara. It's not another Stephen O'Beara. Okay. Oh, that's sorry.
two short poems. Poets never behave, but maybe poems should. So this poem is called Poetic Etiquette. Poems should be well mannered things when they step into this world. They should help the elderly across busy streets, seeing if winter is equal wisdom on each person, and hold open doors to the female counterparts, while frankly admiring the cause of their celebrants. They should never speak with food in their mouths, nor excited to be then a wise morsel, nor invade their noses in places public or not, as a single figure can show consideration. They should be correct in dress, not dowdy or flash, knowing rainbows touch ground in the gutters, and keep all their nails not bitten but trimmed for the arc, the shape and some wonder. They should announce epiphanies in strict time and in meter, they can't offer truths by the drop, not the meter. Apply scansion like a stethoscope tracks ailing hearts, and cosmos politely if it asks them to start. You should admire your children if not by whom they are made, and offer insights like clarity to the jumpstart your day, and they should always give generous teacher of any dreams on the footpath. And the second poem is called Softfish. Some praise the physical mysteries, wonders answer to space and time, transformation of sweet wine to water again, and in flames which embrace and collide. Others see the float, flames sponge their heads, eyes both. Praise me to the autonomy of parts, that seek an invisible hand to work them, appear instead, and where thought is very the ball.
Stephen O'Brien, from one Stephen to another, Stephen O'Brien. Please.
The man. I thought I'd work on my clothes or something with the clothes today, but I managed to get a day off.
It is one of those truths, as far as truths go, that unsought after gems are the most precious by far. That men dig their own graves and scouring for sparkling stones or for the black gold. That what one man misses while traversing the globe, another discovers while overturning the odd stone. That no joy is more felt than the joy unexpected. That the most base of man's needs are the ones last attended. That each ounce of sweat spent in slaves is one better spent in bed. That no day is fuller lived than the one you taught, you toil away.
Stephen's one philosophy of life, which he did quite well there, brilliantly actually. And the only advantage of me being the MC is of course you don't have to listen to me reading a poem or even singing a song, and disgustingly as I sometimes unfortunately do, but I think it would come to the end of the night unless Paul wants to do a bottle of wine. So there I want to thank you all for coming and for reading and for clapping in appropriate and inappropriate places, and particularly to thank Meg for her wonderful reading and her wonderful exposition of Scottish Gaelic and Scottish poetry, and hopefully we'll all be here again next week and enjoy the pints, and presumably some people are going to trottle along to Crane Lane to hear more poetry and some bullshit as well.